Hey there! Most people think that cyber is just for geeks, but the world we live in is an increasingly automated one. From the cars we drive, to the phones in our pockets, to the way we paint stores, everyone is a part of cyber whether we realize it or not. Today we're here with Chris Roberts, the infamous plane hacker, to give you the inside scoop on the cyber that powers your life each and every day. I'm Esty, a security engineer in Boca, and this is Security Z.
Thank you so much for coming out and being on our podcast. I'm super, super excited to finally meet with you. And, you know, have just been talking about your infamous plane hacking. Can you tell us some of like the craziest thing in your opinion, the hack that you're like most proud of?
I think as you said, we were talking about this behind the scenes, all the kind of fun stuff we get to mess around with. And the world is, for good or for bad, nothing more than a huge digital playground these days, both physical and digital. I've been stupidly fortunate to be allowed to break into all sorts of fun places. We broke into the prison system. We were engaged, this is going back a few years now, we were engaged to break into all the prisons or a lot of the prisons around Colorado. And down south of Colorado, there's the Supermax. It's one of the few freestanding Supermaxes. And I mean, they're freaky places. I mean, no two ways about it. They're very freaky places. But they were just building this final wing on it. And they're like, go for it. And we're like, seriously, we get to break into prison. They're like, yeah. Like, yes. So we planned this whole thing out. And I mean, we went down there and we took uniforms and we had badges and keys and could, I mean, we did the whole thing, and we got far enough into the facility that they actually locked us down and locked us in until they fixed a whole bunch of the issues. I don't think they expected us to be able to do quite what we could do.
Oh, I've been in prison for that.
Oh, I mean, yeah, thankfully not too long. It was basically an overnight thing. It was, we'd gotten so far and they basically shut the system down overnight. They had like the third party contractors in, they had a whole bunch of people in like immediately and just knocking all this stuff out. So to their credit, I mean, hugely to their credit, they took it seriously, which doesn't always happen. But I mean, we've done some stupid, crazy stuff. I mean, financial facilities, retail facilities, buildings, you know, as you alluded to, airplanes. Unfortunately, the Aerospace Institute and I have had a few run-ins. The space, it's cold in space. I mean, you want to get a little bit of warmth, so you heat up the space station for a couple of degrees, and then they get all uppity about that.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm saying,
yeah, I mean, it's cold. You want to be comfortable, you know, give them a bit of a heated floor or something like that. So, Mars rovers. We got the Mars rover to play Freddie Mercury plays God Save the Queen. That was a fun one.
Wow, that's so funny.
There's a train station in Chicago that at midnight on certain days still plays God Save the Queen in Morse code. That one I know is still going. I mean, we've done some crazy, crazy stuff. We've made street lights flash. You know, there was a city that put a whole bunch of these Internet of Things enabled street lights in. And so we went and paid it a visit and did crazy stuff there.
Wow.
A couple of us got banned from the Luxor in Las Vegas for, we'd broken in and we'd basically gotten all the lift systems to do what we wanted them to do, not what people in the elevators wanted them to do. And then we were going to go up to the top with it. There's a huge light at the Luxor. What we actually wanted to do was get in there and change the light to start sending Morse code to the space station. Basically, we were going to send swear words to the space station. We figured out, we've done all this planning on this damn thing. We'd gotten in and then we got yelled at. We actually got caught and we got yelled at because apparently if you power the bulbs down and you try to do this flip on a flip off thing, you end up breaking the stupid bulbs. They're very, very sensitive, but I mean, they're crazy bulbs. They're like $20,000 a piece. And we're like, yeah, we didn't think that part through. thankfully, we did not get landed with a bill for that one. I mean, we've done.
It sounds fun.
I mean, it is, but it comes with a shed ton load of responsibility. Because it's like anything. I mean, you get to break something and help people understand it, But the responsibility is then, how do you help them learn? How do you help them get better? How do you help them so that somebody who's not relatively friendly and sensible can't do the same things? You know, we did the same thing with bodies. We got brought in to do a lot of work with nanotech and biotechnology and how to basically hack a physical human. And we were doing some crazy stuff. And the physicians and doctors and stuff and the researchers were like, oh, nobody will do that. And we're like, well, actually, they will. And here's why. So a lot of our work was not necessarily the breaking of things, but was the collaboration and communication to help them understand, look, if we can do it, then somebody who's not as nice as us is going to start using it for advanced ransomware attacks and all sorts of other things. So it's good, but it's also very frustrating because you're like, look, we can see this. How do we get you to understand that we're the nice guys? There's a lot of people who have as good as skills, if not better skills than we do, that can use this for nefarious purposes.
It becomes like a game of life and death, especially when we're talking about nanotech or biotech.
And that's a huge step. I think that's something that as a society and even as an industry, we're not really used to. I'm fortunate and I'm also old enough, let's face it, I'm old enough and gray enough when the beard's not colored, that I've been in this industry since its infancy. And so all the way through it, we've been able to use this planet as our playground with not huge consequences. But in the last couple of years, we're at a point now where we're influencing and have control over so many things that do affect people's lives. And yet we still, unfortunately, in a lot of cases, act like a bunch of damn school kids. We don't really understand those responsibilities. We haven't yet figured out how to explain to people effectively, if I do this, I can kill you. And then try to help them through like the development life cycles to not actually introduce those flaws so that we can't kill somebody. And I think that's it. And as humans, just even taking technology out of it, as humans, unfortunately, we typically don't learn until something happens. You know, I always use the example as a kid, you know, when the first time you went into the kitchen as a kid, your parents or guardians were like, the stove is hot, don't touch it. The kettle is hot, don't touch it. The water comes out of the tap hot, be careful. But we didn't learn that until we burnt our fingers on the stove and the kettle and whatever. So in the digital world, it's going to be tough because we're already separated. You know, we're still, Brian uses the term analog human in the digital world. So there's already that level of separation. And now I have to explain to you, if I screw with this biotech or if I mess with this nanotech, I'm going to be able to kill you from my phone halfway around the planet in, you know, 5 years' time. And I think people still can't connect that. So there's one part of me which is like, I'm just going to pile up dead bodies until you pay attention, which isn't really a nice way of doing it, but it feels like sometimes that's the only way that people pay attention. On the other hand, I'm like, how do we deal with this?
Yeah. It begs the question, how many people have to die until people take security seriously?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, as humans, historically, we've not been good at that. You've only got to look at, you know, vehicles. So we go back to the 60s and 70s when crash safety was this kind of nice-ish thing to have that nobody really cared about until all of a sudden you had you went into the back of the car in front of you and the damn thing blew up. Or you crash into a wall at 20 miles an hour and you killed everybody. Or fast forward, unfortunately, to the aviation industry when two planes had to go down before that particular company put its hand up and went, whoops. I mean, that's several hundred people had to die before an organization goes, hey, we might have made a mistake. To me, that's unacceptable.
Yeah, 100%. How can we invest in people in order to prepare them for the problems of the future?
I think, you know, it's for me, we do, I mean, you hit it perfectly, which is how do we invest in people? And I think that's key. And I think we invest in people through awareness, education, and training. And I'm not really even talking, you know, the typical training. Do you want to come over here and say that on the screen? Milo is sitting on the side of me just whining. It's lunchtime for him. So they're good, by the way. They're fine for a little bit extra. To me, I mean, I came up without a formal degree. I mean, I left school when I was like 15, 16 and went out into the workforce for a few years. Then went into the military and jumped out of airplanes for a living. Mm. My style of learning is hands-on. It's taking things to pieces. It's doing my own research. It's reading system. It's talking. It isn't a very formalized sit down, read a book, do a test. I'm one of those really, really annoying humans that can sit down and take a test and ace the test without unfortunately having learned half the damn coursework. If coursework's involved, I'm screwed because I procrastinate like nobody's business. But so I think we need to teach the people to the people. So if you want formal education, go have at it. But if you want to learn through like some of the academies, some of the training programs, some of the open source stuff that's out there, even go hit code.org, hit HackOne, BugCrowd, all of the other bug bounties and learn that way. To me, I think we need those various different streams, whether it's university, school, tech colleges. I mean, we did some amazing stuff recently with Pima, who are down in Arizona. They got this amazing facility and it's a community college. I mean, it's brilliant. And there's one here, Arapahoe Community College in Colorado is another, it's a community college. And they're building up some amazing security programs that you in the community can just go along and learn. And I think we need more of that grassroots movement. But I also think it needs to be not just for the next generation coming up. It needs to be for the adults. It needs to be for the elderly. I mean, somehow or other, I want to be able to build something where my mother or people's grandmothers can learn at least enough to protect themselves or ask another question.
Right.
You know, I think there's so much in this industry and around the sides of this industry that I think we need to help. I'm running out of snacks here, which is half the problem. He's sitting there whining. He's looking at the snack jar. Yet I've got to get more snacks. I am a bad father for my doggy because... this is the cookie jar for him. And unfortunately, as you can see, the darn thing's almost empty. It literally is crumbs. And I meant to get out yesterday. But no, I think there's so much in this industry. It isn't just come in and break shit. I don't need more people to come into this industry and go, hey, look at what I can break. I don't care.
That's definitely the funnest part of it.
Yeah. It is. Oh, don't get me wrong. It absolutely is. However, if you think about it from a philosophical approach, everything can be broken. The question is, how do you fix it? And that, I think, is where we need the most help. We need the most help on the front end of it. In other words, like development, like there's this huge movement for DevSecOps, development, security, and operations. There's a huge movement to try and get those three teams really working together. And that comes into training and education. Those are soft skills. That isn't going to get taught in the computer lab. That's communication, collaboration, cooperation, coordination. Those are soft skills. That's human. But then you flip it around and go, we also need more and more people that can take the crazy technical ideas and explain them to leadership and explain them in a way that leadership understands in business terms. I mean, there's so technology. I mean, technology is almost everywhere, let's face it. And so we don't just need geeks. We really don't just need geeks. In fact, I don't want any more. We've got a lot of geeks. We need to train the ones we have a little bit more effectively. We're really fortunate. Inside Hillbilly Hit Squad, we've got a pretty diverse core team, you know, and I love it because it's diversity of idea. I might have one way to solve it, yet my two co-founders look at me and go, you're an idiot. Why the hell don't we just do this? And I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't think about that. And that's what we need in this industry.
Yeah. I know, like, I remember when I first entered into security and I like went to SecureSet and being the only woman there, or I went to like a meetup and like I was the only girl there. I remember there's like this little bit of fear of like, maybe I don't belong here.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that if I'm the only person here, then I belong here more than anyone else because I'm needed here, you know. Yeah. Like if you don't see anyone else like you in that room, then you need to be in that room.
Yeah, big time. Big time. That's there is a huge movement to bring not just more women, more people who are not bright white old guys. More diversity. And the irony of the whole thing is the security community is actually ridiculously inclusive when it comes to a lot of that. Now, I put a caveat in there. There are still too many idiots in our industry who can't see past that impression, can't see past the fact you're female. Go, oh, you're female, therefore, hey, can we go out on a date? No, fuck off. I'm female, I'm here for a reason, and by the way, I can probably outcode you, so shut the hell up and sit down and take a seat behind me and we'll learn something from me. There's too much of that shit still going on. I actually had a really good conversation yesterday with the folks at LinkedIn. I had a really, really good conversation with them. I got invited to give some feedback to some of the development teams at LinkedIn. Partly because, again, you know, I use it pretty effectively. I've got a reasonable amount of folks that I keep an eye on LinkedIn. And we were talking about safety and security on LinkedIn. And one of the biggest things for me on LinkedIn was like, look, I'm fed up with hearing that people use LinkedIn as a dating site. Quit that shit. Somehow or other, figure out how to climb that down. Because what we do not need is people coming into this industry who are not bright white males and going, hey, I want to make a change, and then running into the bullshit that some of the folks in our industry give. I've called it out a number of times. There's some people I will not have any association with because I know what they're like. They'll take somebody younger, female, under their wing and go, hi, I'll help you, I'll be good to you. And they're freaking grooming them. I'm like, quit that shit. And we've called it out publicly. And more of that needs to happen, no two ways about it. And I think there's more people need to stand up and say, hey, enough's enough. It's happening. It just needs to happen faster. And, you know, my daughter's 18. And I'm like, if you want to come into this industry, which she doesn't, I'm actually kind of happy. She wants to go be a bloody a cardiovascular surgeon. I'm like, yikes. it's just, to me, it's yikes. Because I started working at 16. She's 18. She's in her final year of high school. She's got like 4 years worth of college, university to do. Then it's like 2 years of pre-med. And then it's 4 years of work. I'm like, when do you actually work?
Yeah. I'm like, people stay in school for so long.
Oh my gosh. I'm like, hang on, you're going to get your first job at what, 30?
Yeah.
By the way, am I on the hook for the next 10, 15 years work? Oh, I am on the hook. College funds. Okay, I better keep working then. I mean, this guy, holy smug. Yeah, but I mean, more power to her. I mean, if that's what she hits, I'll
sounds amazing. You'll come in and hack anything on the side bother her a little bit.
Oh yeah, totally.
I have a few. So one question that I was wondering is, like, you know, we've been talking about this lack of diversity, this lack of education, this shift that needs to happen in security to shift from just like nerdy white male guys to, you know, the idea of security becoming a career for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
What are the most promising initiatives that you have seen?
Ooh, there's a couple of good ones. So one of the first ones, Bridges in Tech, Joanna Uda runs it. She's amazing. And it's primarily Black women in technology. And she runs a podcast every week. She's got her own company running it. She's got a bunch of really cool stuff, and a bunch of us support it, sponsor it, and help out. And so to me, that's great. She's making inroads. She's making a difference. She's gaining awareness. There's the WIST, Women in Cybersecurity, which I think is also fantastic. There's a ton of good stuff happening there. Everything from awareness, from understanding, from just generally going, hey, when you go for an interview, and I was a perfect example of this one. You know, I did it. Somebody asked me to, hey, could I come and hang out with their company? The first thing I now do is I go look at their board of directors and their leadership. If all I see on there is a bunch of white men, I'm going to call it out. And we're like, hey, talk to me about this, because that's only one way of thinking. You want to have a conversation with me about, where's your diversity? why is it the only people I see in leadership are folks coming out of like Harvard and Yale? Why don't I see the pipe fitter in there, the welder, the mechanic, the engineer? And by the way, I want to see some of those people who are not bright, you know, about diversity of color, thought, ideology, you know, sex, religion, whatever it might be. You know, it's a good friend of mine is in the UK, and he and I have long conversations, and he's the only, I can't think of too many people I know in our industry that wear a turban all the time. He is, typically he's wearing a bright blue turban, freaking awesome guy. But I mean, he's the only one. And so you look across this and, you know, and he and I have had plenty of conversations around just different ways of doing things. And so part of it is getting just the general awareness, people like me saying more and more and saying, hey, this isn't right. This needs to happen. This is what we need to do. Part of it is also supporting those movements. And I think part of it is calling companies on the carpet. You know, if you go to, and conferences, I mean, RSA is probably a perfect example of that. You know, was it 2, 3, 4 years ago, you know, RSA security, you know, our keynote lineup was about as, I mean, it was terrible. So you ended up, basically the women stood up and said, this is bullshit, and basically formed their own conference series. And hey, presto, now it's taken off and I love it. And that to me is a, and that put a huge shot across the bows for RSA and made them wake up and go, hey, why are we doing this? When I do panels, you know, and I think a lot of people in this industry say the same thing. When I do panels, one of my first questions is, who else is on it? And if it's just, hey, it's Fred and George and Paul and Ringo, no, not good enough. Sorry, we need different. I want something different. I don't want to do this. Debbie Reynolds is another one in the industry. I mean, there are so many. I have on my desktop, this is, and I do this deliberately, on my desktop, Technology Magazine put a top 100 women, and it was done in collaboration with IBM Security, and it was 2021. It was basically a celebration of women. And so what'll happen is I'll get asked every now and again, like, hey, who would you bring to the conference? I send this to people and go, there's 100 people you need to talk to before you talk to me.
Well,
and I think it's just, it's more and more and more and more of that needs to happen.
I know from the, so I come from a Hasidic community, and like, I've seen so many talented individuals in that community. I've had so many smart classmates, so many people that I think can do really well in the industry, but I think, it's hard to explain because on one hand, the tech industry and security is so open-minded and inclusive, but on the other hand, it's just, it's like this balance of being like super exclusive and super inclusive at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
We're going to get there one day, but
we're not there yet. Yeah, no, we're not there yet. And I think anybody that says we are is fooling themselves. And it's a weird one because, and you hit the nail on the head. This is, I'm very, very careful. I mean, you said yourself, I have a name in the industry. You know, I'm fairly well known in the industry. And with that comes the responsibilities. No two ways about it. And I think one of those responsibilities has to be calling us out for what we need to do differently, what we need to do better, how we need to do something. And actually, I mean, as we're talking, I'm actually thinking, I'm thinking of another LinkedIn post to put out going, hey, as you go and appear on a panel, as you accept a reward, as you do this, think about these things. 100%. Who's the peers that are next to you? If they look like you, step away or call somebody out on it.
100%.
Yeah.
So I think that's one, you know, problem that we have in security. What other human-centric security problems, trends will we see more and more in the next few years?
Oh, we lie and we suck. I mean, good gods, we're terrible. And here's my, to explain that a little bit more. So let's say there's you, I, and two others that have come up with this really cool idea to, I don't know, protect an endpoint device, okay? You start, you know, four of us have got our own four companies. Number one, the first problem is we haven't collaborated and formed one cool company with the four of us in it. We've all gone off and we all want to be multi-billionaires and take our company IPO and get our A round, B round, and C round of funding, which is its own sense of bullshit.
Okay.
Putting profit before protection sucks. So that's one. But the problem is you start off and you're like, hey, you put your marketing material together and your marketing material is like, hey, my product will help you. Well, the person next to you is like, I got to do better than that because I need to sell more because, you know, I've just taken $10 million in funding. My product will protect you. Company number three goes, I got to do better than that. My company will protect you from ransomware 100%. Now me, I'm the fourth company. I've already seen help. I've seen protect. I've seen ransomware. My company
is AI.
Oh yeah, AI, ML, and quantum entanglement to make sure that I always 100% of the time have got you covered.
Yeah, exactly.
And the only person that's probably telling the truth is you. And that's a huge problem. It's massive because now if I'm the consumer, I'm looking at these four companies. I got one company that's like, hey, I'll do my best to cover you. Shit ain't going to be perfect. None of it is. And you're like, okay. And then you got another one's like, hey, I got quantum entanglement. It's 100% protection. You're like, well, fuck, why wouldn't I go for this? It's perfect. And it's probably the same price, give or take a couple of bucks or whatever per endpoint. So our ability to lie to just get, and our acceptance of that sucks. And this is part of the reason I walked away from the company that I was last outside of Hellbilly Hit Squad, the last company I was working with, because they thought everybody else is lying, it's perfectly okay to do it. And I'm like, no, it isn't. So the fact our industry overpromises and underdelivers, that's a massive issue. It's probably one of the biggest ones, because as a consumer and as a business and a company, how the hell do you tell which one's right? I mean, Gartner Magic Quadrant isn't going to do it for you. Which consumer isn't going to do it for you? There's no good, really good independent organization that stands up and goes, that's a bunch of numpties. Those are a bunch of idiots. Those good gods run 100 miles because it's all marketing and there's nothing between it. Oh, hey, yeah, she's got the company. Yeah, go talk to them because they actually got their shit together. That's a big issue. And unfortunately, a lot of it's driven by money. So we are very much, it's profit over protection, which sucks. For me, it should always be mission over money. But it isn't, unfortunately, in so many cases in this industry. So I think that's one of the biggest ones.
Especially when people are getting funded and they're going for their A, B, or C round. It's all driven by investors, the investors. So even if the co-founder has a little bit of a moral complex.
Yeah.
It's all goes down to dollars and cents at the end of the day.
Totally. And I think that's, so if you look at history, and this is, I think, one of those lessons that I did a bit of research 6 months, a year ago, actually beginning of this year, because I've talked about it a couple of times on stage. In the financial industry, so if you take, finance has been with us as an industry for thousands of years. In all of that time, they have minted 365 billionaires. And obviously most of them are recently. I mean, you've got families, billionaire families. The technology industry in the few years that we have been around have minted 350 something billionaires. And that, I think, is the biggest problem. We've minted all these billionaires. We've made people more and more and more money. Yet fundamentally, we still haven't protected anybody. You're still just as likely to lose your information. You're still just as likely to get ransomware. You're still just as likely to be taken for a ride by somebody social engineering you. How can we have made so much money and yet failed so abysmally?
And we'll continue making money.
Well, I mean, that's the problem, because here's what happens is I sell you this and I don't put any warranties and caveats with it. I don't stand behind my product. I'm going to sell you the product. You're going to install it and it's going to fail because I'm still going to be able to break in. And you're going to be like, well, son of a bitch. And I'm going to be like, well, you know, you installed it on a Windows computer. It only runs on a bare metal Unix machine.
You didn't update it.
And then do A, B, C, or D. oh, you connected it to the internet. Well, that invalidates the warranty, for good enough. Why the hell would you want to do that, for God's sakes? You know, and so we put all these caveats around it. And then I come back to you and go, hey, well, you know, I'll sell you another product, and this one will take care of you. But not only do I sell you a product, now I come after you and go, hey, in order for you to do business with people on the internet, you need to pass this audit. And you're like, well, okay. And so you pass the audit. Then I come back to you and go, oh, you want to take credit cards? You got to pass this audit too. Oh, you want to look after people's data? But you got to pass this one too. Oh, you want to do business with the government? Oh, well, then you need to pass these audits too. And now that you've passed all these audits, oh, you're not secure. No, hell no. No, you just passed an audit. Congratulations. No, you need to buy all of this stuff. Oh, and if you install it all together, it doesn't work well together. So when it fails, which is what it's going to do, we're going to sell you even more stuff to fix it. And then we'll sell you more services to do it. It's a racketeering. I mean, it's good gods. This is like pyramid scheme meets racketeering meets Ponzi scheme.
It works.
Oh my gods, it does. I mean, and I think this is the problem. You can yell from the highest mountain that the emperor has no clothes. And because everybody's making a lot of money, nobody's going to complain. And the poor consumer, unfortunately, is the one that keeps footing the bill. You know, if your company is the one that gets breached, you pay the fine, you keep on going. And that money that you paid the fine, you just add a little bit extra to the consumer bill. Healthcare costs a little bit more. The widget costs a bit more. It costs a little bit more to do service, and everybody just keeps on going.
It's a problem.
It's huge. Yeah, it's a huge problem.
Is that what keeps you up at night, or is it something else?
No, that honestly, that's more than anything else is what keeps me up at night. Is how do we change that? You know, the three of us run a podcast on Thursday nights. Ryan, Evan, and I run the Shit Show on a Thursday night. And a lot of that conversation, sorry, good old fisherman's friends to try and keep the throat happy. A lot of that conversation is, how do we put the mission before money? How do we affect change? And I mean, you hit it with the diversity conversation. You know, we hit it with bringing fresh blood into the industry. We hit it through trying to hold organizations more accountable. But there's only so much a few of us can do. It will take a mass stand up of organizations and people to go say, hey, enough is enough.
Yeah. And so, unfortunately, I don't think it's happening tomorrow.
No.
I don't think it's happening next year as well.
No, it's going to take a while. And again, I think back to the earlier conversation we had, is it's going to take a pile of bodies and a big pile of bodies for somebody to go, hey, this isn't working.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, I don't want to think that way, and I don't like thinking that way, but I mean, unfortunately, I think that really feels like how it's going to have to be. It's whether it's bioengineering or biotech that gets hacked. I mean, I was having a conversation with a friend the other day, and it's, I think I put a LinkedIn post out ages ago about it, but it's becoming more and more of a reality. You wake up in the morning and the first email you see is from me going, hey, hope you had a good night's sleep. So I'm in your body. I've got access to this, this, and this inside your body. If you'd like to sleep again tomorrow and you want to wake up the following day, feel free to just send me $100. Otherwise, you know, kiss you goodbyes to everybody today. We're not far off of being able to do that.
Well, are we really that close?
5 years, 10 at the most.
Well,
yeah. I can do it now. You can do it. We can already do it now with insulin pumps, with heart rate monitors, with smart pills, and various other patches that we have on the human body. But
you can do that one inside the human body?
Yeah. But very soon we're getting to the point where we are, and we're looking at targeted attacks against, you know, Alzheimer's, against age systems, against cancer and various other things. We're looking to utilize that. You know, 5-10 years down the line, those emails are going to start coming out, because I sure as hell I'll tell you right now. I mean, from an industry standpoint, that's brilliant. I got 6-7 billion people on this planet that I can now ransomware.
It is brilliant. And you can use like just crypto to pay for the ransomware. Super easy transaction.
Oh yeah. At that point, it's great. I mean, good grief. I mean, unfortunately, I don't see it being too far off. And it seems sounds horribly dystopian, but if you look at where technology is going and how we're using it, and you look at humanity, humanity is going to go one of three different directions. We are already augmenting ourselves. We're already doing a lot to make ourselves smarter, faster, more resilient, blah, 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 using technology. A lot of it is still outside, but not long before it goes inside, at which point now becomes a real interesting conversation. We're also taking ourselves and putting ourselves into technology. So one of the projects I'm working on is a neural project where we're taking myself and, you know, basically building a digital version. Now that's a huge attack vector. If all of a sudden I realize this soft, squashy, old, now aging body is no use and I go all digital, well, I mean, that's a whole other ball of wax on that one. And so, yeah, there's some really interesting stuff that we are literally looking over the cliff going, what happens if? And yet, unfortunately, on the other side of the world, we can't even get people to understand that a password of 123456 probably isn't the best thing.
What about 123456 exclamation?
Oh, yes. There we go. Yeah, you've made it more complex now. Or the sneaky ones is when they add 7, 8, and 9 onto the end. I'm like, oh, now you got me. Oh, now you got all sneaky on me.
Exactly. It's a little bit terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, I think with all this technology, there's like this urge to develop. And like, we're looking at so much innovation and so much development, and it gets really exciting.
Yes. But
people forget to build in is security, because like,
yes,
you know, if we can build a neural version of ourselves, how can we build a neural version of ourselves that is digital? And what if we build a neural version of ourselves that talks the way that we do?
Oh yeah.
And then like, we're not even thinking about like what somebody can do with that neural version of ourselves, unfortunately.
Not at all. And I think that's where the
not until NASA calls out Chris Roberts for messing with that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where it gets really interesting is we already have a hard problem attributing. So again, we go back to pre-heavy internet days. If I wanted to insult you, I would have to come up to you face to face and go, your mother smelled of elderberries and your father was a hedgehog, you know, the typical Monty Python line. And you could react by picking up something up and smacking me upside the head or kicking me, you know, in the man vegetables. Nowadays, in today's day, I can hide behind all sorts of interesting things and anonymize myself and insult you that way. You step another layer in front of that, and the version of me that's insulting you isn't me. And so how do you attribute it? How do you put blame? How do you, LinkedIn and I were talking, I'm like, how, if somebody comes up with another Chris Roberts profile, how are you going to validate that it's me? What are you going to do to make sure that it's actually my legitimate fingers on the keyboard or behind the keyboard that are doing it? That whole concept of attribution, you know, user identity and all that, I mean, that's going to become more and more and more complex and harder to prove.
This is so fascinating. I could talk about this forever. thank you so much for your time and for sharing.
Thanks for having me. I mean, totally. This was, you reached out and it was like, oh, hell yeah, let's just hang out and have a conversation. Yeah. So kudos and thank you.